oh, I don't belong here.
Today's topic we wanted to talk about is imposter syndrome. And this is something that is very common with doctoral students. Most of them are really excited when they come to a doctoral program. But at some point in a doctoral program, they start to experience self-doubt, anxiety, imposter syndrome.
Welcome to the second podcast of the Grad School Grind. We are joined this afternoon by Michelle Candidate. Dr. Candidate is a recent graduate of Grand Canyon University, and we are welcoming the stories and the insight that you have to share with us today. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
You come from an athletic background. You were a two-time world champion in the 100-meter hurdles, yes. But you went to the Olympics in Greece in 2004 for the heptathlon.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. You have a lot of experience talking to yourself during the training process and the competing process and things like that. And I find that sometimes when I talk to students, that they also talk with how they talk themselves into finishing something or drew on a past experience. First off, did you experience imposter syndrome?
I definitely did. It was very easy to get your document back and see all that was wrong with it. And this is not the same as a master's program. Maybe the taking the courses feels similar, but when you actually start writing your dissertation, it's a different ball game. Mm-hmm. Now, mind you, I put a timeline together to write all these chapters. This is my first draft. I turned it in, and in my mind, it was the best thing ever. That work is going to come back to you. And you open it and you're like, I really thought this was good work.
Right.
You think, I don't know what I'm doing. You think you know what you're doing, and then when you get it back, you're like, no. So when I first opened up my file and I'm reading all of its comments, I was like, oh, I don't know if I should have done this. And my husband's like, what are you talking about? And I'm just going crazy.
So you're already 2+ years in the program.
Yes.
And you're having this feedback and you're like, what?
Yes. And so I'm reading all the bubbles. I'm freaking out. But here was the great part about it was, once I read all the bubbles, went through it, and then I sent an email and I was like, I need to meet with you about my comment.
So it was really a matter of him calming you down and helping you understand, like,
this gets better. Instead of you saying, oh my God, I'm not good. I don't know why I'm here. I don't know why I'm doing this. But it was very refreshing to know that there was someone on the other end that was going to help you get on the right path. It was really important for him to say, look, you did the work, but let me help you get to where you need to go. And so in your mind, you do have those moments that's just extremely negative, makes you want to quit. And you have to just say to yourself, I'm not going to quit. And I think that first call for me was important for me to understand, okay, this is where you are, but we are going to get to the finish line. And so I started telling myself that I'm going to get to the finish line, and I need to really take these comments seriously and figure out how I can correct my errors.
Because a lot of times when we go through failure, we think failure is the end. Mm-hmm. Nobody sees failure as a lesson. I'm actually doing that with my own children. I'm starting to teach them failure is a lesson. It's not the end of the world.
There's no such thing as a perfect research document. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like everything is a process, and our committee is always trying to put us in the best position to succeed.
But the student doesn't always see it that way.
Yeah, why is that?
So I think there's like an intimidation factor that, okay, everyone on my committee is a doctor. They are not novice researchers. They've probably published this several times. They've been doing this for quite some time. So they, to you in their mind, they're the expert. And you're trying to become an expert. But at the end of the day, you're the expert on your research. And so it takes a while for you to build that confidence. And it takes a while for you to understand that, hey, I do belong here. And it took me several iterations to realize, I belong here. I can really do this. Even though I was in the program, I told myself that when I started. But like you said, that imposter gets in your mind. And then you have to start leaning more into the positive side of your brain that's saying, you belong here. You can do this. Read and figure out what you can write here different to make this comment correct, or to make the correction instead of saying, I don't want to do this anymore. Because if you lean the opposite way, you don't get to the finish line. Mm-hmm. But if you lean into the comments, if you lean into the corrections, every step is going to move you towards the finish line. So for me, it took me longer than the program actually was, but I never gave up.
I love the whole phrase there, leaning in.
Absolutely.
To the correction.
We talk about the mindset shift that has to occur.
Mm-hmm. And then if you don't take that personal, take the personal out of it, take the emotion out of it. And like I said, lean into what does this say to do and how can I make this better and follow it. It saves you a lot of heartache. It really does.
A lot of students that first come into a program experience imposter syndrome right in the first class, as opposed to two years down the road or something when they're starting their dissertation. Did you experience any of that in your first class or second class or third class?
What did terrify me a little bit was our first class. They told us, I think it was 21 of us in there. And it was told to the professor that was there at the time said, so you guys are in a doctoral program. And then he told us the percentage of people that actually finish. And so a couple of us are kind of having our side conversations. And we're like, that means about five of us in this room are actually going to make it across the finish line. So we're all looking at each other.
Who's it going to be?
Exactly. But I said to myself, I'm going to be one of those five people.
Right.
It took me longer. But to me, I feel like better to take me longer than to quit.
Right.
So if I have to, because I had two children in the program. Mm-hmm. I came in pregnant with one and gave birth to her. And then I got pregnant again at the very end. So I took breaks for both babies. But each time I got back in there and got back on the horse and kept going. All that matters is if you finish. And so once I started wrapping my mind around that, I was like, okay, I need to graduate.
The timeline piece is,
yes,
I think, so big. Like, it hangs over you,
yes,
in a sense.
And
so you had that mindset, is that you're going to finish,
mm-hmm,
right?
From day one.
And I'm assuming a lot of that comes from your background as an athlete, right? And where, you know, the finish line is always the conversation, mm-hmm, is always the goal.
Exactly.
Right? What early on in your athletic career, and maybe like in your amateur career, were you able to begin to develop that type of mindset?
So I think you have to say to yourself what it is that you want. And there's actually a scripture that says, so as a man thinks, so is he. And I try to be mindful of this, but it's so easy to say, you know, something bad about yourself or say, I can't do this, or I can't win, or anything negative about yourself. But are you taking the time to sow positive words into yourself? Are you taking the time to say, I can do this?
And so in your heart and in your mind, if you say, I want to, like you say, I want to become a doctor, you got to say to yourself, okay, how do I go about doing that? And then if this is what it takes, am I willing to do that? And if I say I'm willing to do that, no matter what negativity comes at me, I have to be willing to cross that barrier
and keep going towards what it is that I want.
It follows that conversation earlier about the language that we use and how we define ourselves in the space and define the work that we're a part of. The moment for me, I remember leaning back in my chair going, I just feel like I don't know anything. And they said, that's how you're supposed to feel. Like, what?
That's perfect. That's how you're supposed to feel. But you don't know that.
Not at all. Not at all.
There's a level of humility, yeah, in that. You,
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
Knowing, not knowing.
It was very hard to be confronted by that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I've never been here before, so I, mm-hmm, have to justify my place here. You know, that there's just comparison. Did you ask classmates for assistance, direction, insight, experience, perspective?
So interestingly enough, my cohort was very, we were very supportive of each other. It was seven of us that developed like friendships. And we kind of went through together, and some people started moving ahead and some of us were behind or wherever we were, but we all cheered each other on. So we had this group message and we kind of keep up with each other about where are you, where are you in the program? What did you get past? How did you do that? Who's your chair? Like we would always ask each other questions, always try to support each other. It was more like championing us on. Like, if I can do it, you can do it. We started together, we're gonna finish together. So I really had a supportive group of people within my cohort. And then in my residency, I met two other people that kind of became friends and just kept texting on the phone or things like that. And so when I was in the actual doctoral process, once you finish the classes, we would text each other and say, oh, I just finished this, or I just made this milestone, or I just made this milestone. So maybe you're behind that person, but it gave you, it encouraged you to be like, okay, I'm gonna get to that milestone now. So I think that helped me as well, mm-hmm. having other students that I had camaraderie with and other students that were supporting me and kind of leading the charge on, hey, this is where I am, you can do this too. Mm. So I think when you're going through it with other people, it makes you want to keep going, as opposed to if you isolate yourself and you're on this island by yourself trying to figure all that out.
How heavily did you rely on your faith during those moments of imposter syndrome?
My faith is extremely important to me. And I mean, we're all flawed people, but I do make an effort to try to keep my connection with God and try to keep the word as a part of my life and a part of my family. And so I think having scripture and being able to pray and having something bigger than you to lean on can help you get through things, because it was very important when I was going through the Olympics, as well as when I was competing in world championships. Prayer was always something I did prior to competing, and it just keeps giving you that that energy you need to keep going. Because it's very easy, like I said, to give in to negativity, to give in to doubt. But then when you are taking your time to pray and taking your time to read your word, and your word is telling you, you are great, you're a masterpiece. And if nobody else is telling you a masterpiece, your word is telling you a masterpiece. And if you start to believe these things, why can't I go out in the world and conquer everything? Without something bigger than us, how do we keep taking the next step, the next step, and the next step? Because life is a long journey.
For the wonderful conversation. So thank you so much. And let me say, Dr. Kennedy.
Thank you so much. Thank you both so much. It's been a pleasure.